Yeah, I guess we can start.
All right. Let's do this.
All right, this week on the 100 of Some Movie Thing podcast, we watched Spike Lee's 1989 film, Do the Right Thing.
You got to fight the power! Fight the power!
Yes, you do indeed have to fight the power.
Fight the hand, I'm done. All right. So, this was an interesting movie. I enjoyed this very much. This is the first movie that I've seen that really kind of involved kind of a subject that's not really touched upon anymore, the subject of race and coexisting with...
That's really interesting point right off the bat.
Yeah.
You're right. There's not not as many... Well, actually, come to think of it, I can't think that there were very many at the time that this film came out either, but yeah, this film touches on race in a way that I think a lot of filmmakers are kind of afraid to approach it that way anymore.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it really didn't pull any punches. I mean, looking at the production notes that were on the DVD, mm-hmm. They said Spike Lee said that he wanted people to feel like appalled at the end of the movie, which. But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. I think we should probably talk about a little bit about what this movie's about and what exactly is going on in this thing.
Okay, so Spike Lee made a film that is as much a portrait of daily life as in a neighborhood as it is a meditation on race. Over the first hour of the film, we're introduced to a large cast of characters, young and old, who represent the many facets of this community.
Yep.
There are the neighborhood stalwarts, ML, Coconut Sid, Sweet Dick Willie.
Sweet Dick Willie.
How did he get that name anyway?
I don't know.
They never did explain that.
Yeah, they beat around the bush.
They left it up. Oof. Yikes.
Yikes.
Anyway. They pass the time commenting on events in the neighborhood. Every time somebody passes them, they make a crack, then they go at each other.
Yeah.
There's also the mayor, the local drunk, played by Ozzie Davis, and his wife, his real-life wife, Ruby Dee, plays Mother's sister, and in the film, they're at odds with each other for some long-forgotten reason. They are both... It's a really nice on-screen relationship that they have. That you can see that there's a spark, there's a chemistry there.
Yeah.
But she does not like him. No, she does not.
No. Oh, wait.
You know. Younger generations are represented in part, at least, by upcoming at the time, Martin Lawrence, Bill Nunn, and Giancarlo Esposito, who this is not his first film by a long shot, but this was one that kind of exposed him to... A larger audience, and yeah. You may know Giancarlo Esposito by his work most recently as Gus Fring in Breaking Bad.
It took me 20 minutes to figure that out.
I had to stop the film a couple times, paused on Giancarlo Esposito's face, and say, "Okay, now imagine him with no hair.
Like a Bond villain now."
Yeah. So. He played a character called Buggin' Out, who has a sort of, I don't know, his hairline is cut in a way that suggests Charlie Brown's shirt.
It looks like a checkered board,
And the top of his head is an explosion of strange, almost dreads.
It kind of looks like somebody glued black licorice to his head.
Actually, I think somebody in the film actually commented about that, didn't they? And then we have Sal and his sons, Italian Americans, who come to this neighborhood every day and make pizza in their restaurant, mm-hmm. Which Sal built with his own hands.
His own two bad hands!
To 25 years he's been in the restaurant. Danny Aiello plays Sal, just note perfect. It is a fantastic turn. John Turturro and Richard Edson play his sons, Pino and Vito. John Turturro takes not so casual racism to a new height in this film. And then Richard Edson as Vito is he doesn't understand. He doesn't get why his older brother is so just like he doesn't get why he doesn't like coming to the restaurant, why he doesn't want to get along with the people here. And that's a source of friction between the brothers. So so for a short time it actually appears that everybody's going to, you know, get along, that this that this film will be just about a day in the life in Bedford-Stuy.
Yep.
Bedford-Stuyvesant or Bed-Stuy. But it's the hottest day of the year.
Yeah.
It's going to be over 100 degrees. Hot as the devil.
Yeah.
As Mother Sister says. And little things start to get at the people. You know, bugging out, comes into the restaurant, where he's been coming every day, three times a day.
Yeah.
He argues with Sal over the price of a slice of pizza and why it costs $2 extra to get extra cheese on the slice of pizza. And then he asks why. And this is a conversation that they have obviously had for a very long time.
Yeah.
But it's the hottest day of the year. This is it.
Yeah.
And when Buggin' Out asks why there aren't any black folks on the wall of fame,
his wall of fame,
the response is, hey, you want black folks on the wall? Go get your own pizzeria.
Yeah.
And put the people that you want on the wall. This is my place. There's going to be Italian Americans on the wall.
Yep.
Which, you know, if you're just having this conversation, they could be joking back and forth. They could be longtime pals. They've obviously known each other for a long time.
Yep.
So if it wasn't for the fact that this heat is here, and you can feel it. This is one of those good examples of where color especially is used as a reminder to you that it's hot.
Yeah.
Everything has a reddish or orange tint to it.
Yep.
The bedrooms at the beginning of the day when they're announcing the temperature and you're saying, oh, that's pretty hot, but the light coming in the window is red, and it's just, oh, that's oven temperatures we're in. You know, there's fans, they're all turning, but there's no breeze.
Yeah.
There's a scene that's played in a very brightly lit room that would suggest normally that, you know, okay, so this is going to be a cooler place because it's this kind of calm green.
Yeah.
You know, but the woman in the scene is sitting in front of a fan the whole time. In fact, the scene is shot practically through the fan.
Yeah, blades. Oh, it's pans down.
Pans down, so you can see that this thing is blowing on her, and that's the only way she's keeping cool. And these constant reminders, going back to the pizza shop, and the ovens are on, and every time they're in the pizza shop, there is a sizzling noise in the background because the ovens are going. But that sizzling noise there reminds you
it's hot.
Bacon on a frying pan and meat, you know, just cooking, and that then again brings back, it's hot. It's, you know, things are about to boil over.
Yeah.
So Bill Nunn plays a character called Radio Raheem, he's interesting. I don't understand the impetus behind the character himself.
Yeah.
He does a few things in the film that seem, you know, it's very selfish. You know, it's like, his thing is this. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he carries a giant boombox. And he walks around the neighborhood, and every time he meets up with somebody, he turns his boombox up
And blasts
if,
it.
If
yeah.
blasts it, and if they have a radio going, he will turn his radio up.
Yeah.
To and I apologize for not knowing the significance of that, other than he's doing what he wants to do, and he is expressing his individuality and his own I don't know, his own self-image there, and he's projecting that onto other people. And when they yeah. challenge him,
he gets
his anger out by turning the music up.
Which honestly, throughout the film, it doesn't really make him a sympathetic character, given what happens to him towards the end of the film. And you know, it's,
interesting point. Yeah. I did feel some sympathy because the brutality at the end of the film.
Yeah.
And that was something that you started to touch on earlier, and, mm-hmm. and we're still there's a whole mess of things in the middle that we've kind of glossed over. But the brutality at the end of the film is, even with the chaos that's going on, even with the fact that there's a burning building, even though it is still over the top.
Yeah.
That the police essentially strangle Radio Raheem
yeah.
To death while subduing him.
Yeah.
Because even the police, the other police in the same scene, are telling the officer to let him go.
Yeah.
And he's not. And so that suggests that it's overtly, you know, it's very plain and simple that it is murder.
Yeah.
And it's on this cop mm-hmm. who did it. And that's, you know, and being at the end of the film, there isn't any follow-up. There's no...
Yeah, that's the...
There's no, oh, now we're going to investigate this. Now there's going to be, you know, some justice yeah. or something like that. Because in a lot of cases, especially through the 80s, there were a number of police officer, police-related shootings of people who were either unarmed or just plain... weren't doing anything wrong yeah. in the first place and got shot. There was a kid who was strangled by Michael Stewart, who was strangled yeah. by transit cops for Wait. Graffiti.
Transit cops, like
Michael Stewart.
Like
I have
meter mates?
No. Transit cops, subway cops.
Oh.
And there were 11 police officers involved.
Wow.
In that. Right. So that's the kind of event that was happening, had happened over the course of several years, decades really.
Yeah.
In New York City.
Well, I mean, weren't the LA riots were caused because a African American man got pulled over and they pulled him out of his car and the police beat him essentially to
That was the Rodney King. That was yeah. that was There were other reasons. There were other
yeah,
things, but that was one of the main things there. And yeah, so we have this sort of climate in the States at the time where, you know, man, I don't even know where this podcast is going to go now because, you know. It's difficult to really even talk about it because things for some people haven't changed at all. Things for other people have. I think that, you know, given even with Occupy and with, you know, these other things, I think there's, I don't know, it's tough. But I don't think that you could make, a movie about events that are happening now.
Yeah.
That would have as much impact as Do the Right Thing did in 1989.
Really?
Hmm. When this movie came out, I went to see it in the theater. I went to see it with a bunch of my friends.
Yeah.
And it knocked us out. It was like, you know, and I, at the time, I saw everything. I saw, you know, I had even seen, and now the name of the movie has flipped out of my head, but I had even seen... the previous film, I think She's Gotta Have It, that Spike Lee had done. This is so different than that. It's just, you know, it has this theme of an underlying tension, and you get that from the beginning, but it doesn't have to go the way it did in this film, but it did, and that's a really good point on Spike Lee's part there, that the film went someplace where real life goes, and then the next day
started all over again.
It was just back to normal.
Yeah,
completely. Just, you know, even Sal and Mookie, who I forgot to introduce earlier. Spike Lee plays a character named Mookie, who goes between. He's the go-between.
Yeah.
For all these different groups, he interacts with everybody in the film.
But sometimes they don't interact with each other.
Right. Even when they're not interacting with each other, and until the end, when the climax of the film, when the store is looted. So now I kind of forgot where I was going with this. So yeah, at the end of the film, spoiler alert, Sal and Mookie are having a conversation not just about what happened. They're having a conversation about basically what's going to happen with the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, Sal is going to continue to get along. He's going to, at some point, probably rebuild.
Yeah.
He might not in that neighborhood, but, you know, he's gonna provide for his family. He's going to continue to do what he's doing. Mookie is going to continue getting along, but I think that his decision in the film to essentially be the tipping point.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird like scene, because he was.
So what do you think about that? Okay, so we'll build up to. I'll back it up just a little bit. So things come to a head. Bugging out, Giancarlo Esposito arranges a 2-man boycott of Sal's Pizzeria because he.
3-man.
Because that's right. They did have Smiley with them. Smiley is a mentally handicapped man who walks around with pictures of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King shaking hands, and he draws on them with large markers and sells them for $2 a piece.
And he was actually the guy who established like what time period this was. They had a scene at the very beginning that was kind of like a kind of a tight shot of him looking up at him, and he was talking about Malcolm X and Luther King are both dead.
Right.
He said that.
Right, but this will have been 20 years at that time.
Well, yeah, but for someone who, you know, hasn't seen the film I don't have context, and I wasn't born in 1989.
You weren't alive back in the day.
Yeah, old man. Anyway, so it kind of provides a little bit of context for people like myself who have just seen this movie in 2012 when, you know, this stuff really wasn't, you know, recent history because I wasn't alive during it.
So, okay, so given that, and even without context.
Yeah.
Okay, so without context, what does the film say to you?
That the issues that were... The issues of race and the issues of racism and segregation and all that stuff are still ongoing. They aren't just going to stop because of one movement. I mean, you can't change the minds of every single person, regardless of whatever you do. And it's a difficult struggle, but, you know, you all kind of have to just get along. And, you know, you may not like the change, but it's coming and it's happening. It's going to happen. Does that make sense? I mean, that's kind of what I took away from the film, was that, you know, things may suck, but, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat, so might as well get along. Not necessarily the hand holding. Why can't we be friends? But
so, So, okay, I'm not, yeah, okay.
So I feel that in this movie they kind of portrayed a almost a realistic way of coexisting, cohabiting, because, you know, the tensions between...
That there's going to be tensions, there's going to be things that make everybody mad.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually, and every once in a while, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Something's going to give, and something's going to get broken.
Yeah.
But the next day, you're going to pick up and move on.
Yeah. And that's really kind of the best that we can hope for until, you know, we all discover the singularity happens and we all upload our brains to right. massive
well,
hard drives.
That's enough
and
of that.
I'm done talking now. anyway, so you were talking about the one of the final scenes of the movie where...
Right, so Buggin' Out organizes a boycott of Sal's Pizzeria. And he wants to have African-American pictures on the wall.
Yep.
And he recruits Radio Raheem and Smiley to go with him to boycott Sal's Pizzeria.
Yep.
And
which I don't think they really understand the point of a boycott. They don't.
I think that as was pointed out to Buggin' Out in the film,
yeah.
his energies would have been better directed to a more positive thing.
Yeah.
He definitely had that social activism vibe about him. He
yep.
had a cause, he had some energy, had a lot of energy behind it, and he acted on the energy.
Yep.
So all of that's good, except for he didn't have any community support. Everybody
yeah.
he talked to, every single person he talked to said, no, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
We've all, you know, all the young people he talked to said, you know what? We grew up eating his pizza.
Yeah,
so,
way.
You know, go away. Whatever.
Yeah.
The three guys, ML and Coconut Sid and Sweet Dick.
Sweet.
What?
Okay, all right, go ahead.
What did they tell him?
They told him that he
They said, not only get away from us, you're an idiot. And they had just had beef with Sal and his son.
Yeah.
They had been, yeah. when they were talking, when Sal and Pino were talking,
yeah.
Smiley came to the window, Pino went apeshit on him and said, get out of here.
Yeah.
And then he went outside, and the three guys across the street started yelling.
Yeah, leave him alone. Yeah.
At Pino. And so there was tension, but when Buggin' Out came to them and said, I want to have a boycott, they said,
yeah.
no.
And I think...
And you should go boycott the barber who messed up your head.
Best line of the movie.
So,
I'm sorry. That
know,
was that hands
there was
down
that.
Best
so,
line of the movie.
So he had no community support.
Nope.
Sal, the white guy,
yeah.
in this community, as much as they had talked about, well, you know, there's the guys over there, the Koreans have moved in.
Yeah,
and they
so
came
angry
off,
about
they came
that.
Off the boat, and then they had this store, and we should have a store, and Sal had the store,
yeah.
and we should have the store, and we don't have any stores in this neighborhood,
yeah.
but Uh-huh. when they went to get food, they went to Sal's, and when they went to get beer, they went to the Korean store.
Yep.
And they bought it, and they paid with their money, and yeah. that's but that's reality, and that's how that works. And you get upset about things that you can't change, and then you move on because you know what? You still have to pay your bills. You still have to eat.
Yep.
You still have to drink. You still have to do all these. You know.
Yeah.
Whatever, alcohol, whatever, but
yeah.
you have to do the things that you have to do in order to continue to live.
Yep.
Okay, so he organizes the boycott of three. They come in, Radio Raheem won't turn down his radio, they're yelling at each other, Sal's yelling, and at this time, we actually see the true colors of Pino, who has been really... bald-faced in his racism. He is talking about how he doesn't want to be in this neighborhood anymore,
yeah.
that the people that are around him are animals, that he doesn't, you know, he hates being there every day, that they should sell the place and move to their own neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, because his friends make fun of him and you know, all this stuff and he backs right down.
Yeah.
It's Vito that jumps in first. When Sal takes the bat to Radio Raheem's radio and you know.
Yeah.
Kills it. So, the radio. So, there's this great moment when everybody is at the peak of their anger, and everybody is ready to break, and it's Sal that actually snaps, pulls out his bat, and beats the radio to death.
Yep.
And then tells Radio Raheem, "I killed your radio." And there's a moment there, there's a second when you can see on everybody's face, it is time to stop.
Yeah.
And then that passes.
And then
that's when Radio Raheem
just
jumps over the counter, and you know, so there's a huge fight. The kids that are in the pizza house there, the pizza shop, go nuts.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden they're fighting, for real fighting this time.
Yeah.
Vito jumps in, then Pino jumps in.
Yeah.
They push Sal outside. The cops show up. There's a crowd of people gathered. The cops show up, and when the cops pull everybody apart, they hold on to Radio Raheem and put him in a stranglehold.
Yeah.
And
one cop does. That's
one,
the thing.
One police officer does.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
Radio Raheem is strangled. Bugging Out is arrested.
Yeah.
Never do find out what happens to him.
I suspect he turns into a drug dealing warlord in Arizona. that's how it ends. That's just
they're in New Mexico.
Oh.
So the other cops, as I said earlier, the other cops are saying, you gotta let him go.
Yeah.
You gotta let him go. Let go of him. And you know, he doesn't, and there's that. So there are so many moments. There's so many moments in that film, as in real life, when things could go completely differently.
Yeah.
Completely differently. And after all of that, the police take Radio Raheem away, they take Buggin' Out away, and there's just the crowd, and there's Sal and his sons, and they're facing the crowd. Demare is entreating everyone to be calm, to go home.
Yeah.
Don't do anything that you're going to regret tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's Mookie that grabs a trash can, walks it all the way across the street, and throws it through the window of Sal's place.
Yeah.
And he makes the decision that for him, for right now, it's
breaking time.
It's the right thing for him to do.
Yeah. So the thing I kind of found interesting about that action that he chose was that he was loyal in a sense to Sal for most of the movie. I mean, he was his delivery guy. I mean, he worked for him and all that stuff. And then he finally just decides that, you know, he killed one of the people that I care about. His actions resulted in the death of a friend of mine, so it's time to take what he loves, so to speak. I mean,
which also speaks to a sort of situational short-sightedness as well, because he didn't see that the action that everybody's actions, including Radio Raheem's own actions, led up to that.
Yeah, that it was,
and as happens in crowd situations, they focused on who was left, not who had left, because at that point the police had left.
Yeah,
the two cars that showed up, and the four police officers that showed up.
Yep,
they all left.
Yep. So they focused on
and left a crowd of very angry people.
Yeah,
to finish whatever fight had started.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was a direct commentary on anything specific, or if that was based on an actual event where, you know, police. But then the police showed up again.
Yep.
After the building had been looted and set on fire. I don't know. It's honestly, I did not expect to have the feelings running around in me that I have right now about this film. That a lot of the things that were brought up for me at the time I saw it, when I first saw it, and I haven't seen it since it came out. Maybe once or twice on video since then, but I have not. And I certainly haven't seen the film in close to 20 years.
Yeah, and it's
still works.
Yep,
it's still something that could happen at any time. Maybe some of the specific issues aren't quite as prevalent, and maybe they are. I don't know. I don't live in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have contact with the. With the various communities that are represented in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this film is it's kind of poignant even today, because it's just kind of an example of just what happens when you have two groups that are kind of living together without really kind of wanting to deal with each other, so to speak, but they still have to coexist.
But the reality of the situation is that they deal with each other every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day. They're doing something. There is some interaction.
Yeah.
And when it stresses that when you have to get along with somebody,
yeah,
you can.
Yep.
And everybody's just a person. Mm-hmm. And unless you're being inflammatory all the time, that people are gonna get along with you.
Yeah, but it's no different than a relationship or anything like that. I mean, eventually something's gonna happen. Somebody's gonna have an argument that's gonna lead to a fight, that's gonna lead to a burned down building. It's one of those things where
I'm really hoping that you don't have. Well, really, any relationships that lead from arguments to fights to burn down buildings,
no,
my son.
That's not what I meant. No. That eventually.
And I can really only think of maybe one or two that led to burn down buildings in my own life. And
what kind of life have you lived? Good God. No. No, what I meant was it doesn't matter how much you care about the other group, the other party in this relationship. Something eventually is going to cause an argument. There's going to be tension, which I think was I liked how this film didn't portray the society of cohabitation, the cohabitation of races, not as this happy everything is fine because everything is fine because we said it was fine. Mm-hmm. There's still people that are racist. There are still people that are angry about things. There are still people that just don't want to put up with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed this film very much. And it's one of those ones that every time that I look at this list, and it's like I have a new favorite movie, and I'm kind of. We're only on what number 96?
Number 96.
Number 96 of 100. Mm-hmm. I'm a little freaked out to see what's coming up, because I think this might kind of affect the way I see movies. Seriously,
I think that was actually kind of the point of the exercise.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So.
So if we've said anything on this podcast that offends you. Good. Write us an email. We're at 100 of something. That's 100 of something at gmail.com. On the Twitter box, I am at Mr. Bowen.
I'm at the Fro. That's the _ Fro.
And we'd love to hear from you. And next week we'll be watching The Last Picture Show.
Ooh.
Yes.
I don't even know what that's about.
After next week, you will.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Let's do it.
Bye.
Bye.